God.
Yeah.
Grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change,
to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would simply like to welcome you by first name. There's no hot seat. Nobody's going to interview you. Anybody in their first 30? All right. If you're on Zoom, you can raise your virtual hand. Someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to refrain from moving about the room, this thing we're in. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. The foreword to the book Alcoholics Anonymous says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. So the format of this meeting is an open big book study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are on step one, part one. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Scott and Elizabeth. I will read the first paragraph or so from the book. In the doctor's opinion, we start on Roman numeral 26. Step one also says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms that we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or that we were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent. In fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Scott.
David. Scott, alcoholic.
Hey, Scott.
Life seems so much brighter from this seat than from those out there. But all kinds of stuff here. A couple things draw my attention. One is where it writes about how, as laymen, our opinion may mean little. It's like, I never cared what my opinion meant. I was more than happy to share it with you, whether it had scientific validity or not. But it's interesting to me because it kind of lays out in advance the way the rest of the book is going to deal with what this problem is. You know, the AA has no claim that it's the one and only path to sobriety. It's a group of people who share their experience, strength, and hope, who express to others, this is how it worked for me, and it's a pretty good chance it could work for you. So I appreciate that tone, because coming in, and even now so many years later, I'll argue anything and look for any loophole. So I love this approach. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Doesn't have to be a perfect explanation. It just explains it. But the phrase alcoholic torture kind of stuck out to me in the first paragraph. As I quit drinking in December 30th, 1997. 30 years ago today, I was visiting the Western Tidewater Regional Jail for about 90 days as a result of some alcoholic escapades. And I was in the neighborhood today. I just drove past, as I do every so often when I'm in that neighborhood. And I think, man, what a difference 30 years makes in the 12 steps. But the I guess the alcoholic torture came to mind because I remember when I left there, you know, it was my third DUI, convicted for driving on a suspended license from the second one, which is why I got to visit the jail for a while. And so I didn't have a car or a license or anything when I got out. And my first thought was, I need some alcohol, in spite of the fact that that's the very thing that put me in jail. And I had a friend who knew my story and was willing to come pick me up from jail, give me a ride. And I said, no, I'll meet you at your office, because in between the jail and his office was an ABC store. So I walked, you know, in, you know, however many miles it wasn't super long, with my clear plastic trash bag full of clothes over my shoulder, and stopped at the ABC store to get the bottle, because I knew I wouldn't have a license or a car to get anything when I got home. That was alcoholic torture. I knew alcohol didn't work, but I didn't know of any other way that did, and I wasn't willing to commit to anything. And it took me another year from that point on, which I share in this context, because that was absolute powerlessness. I wasn't ready to acknowledge that, but that was absolute insanity. The only reason I was in jail was alcohol, and what's the very first thing I did walking out was to get more. So if I could have seen that 30 years later, I'd be here in an AA meeting, I would have thought, oh no, something's gone horribly wrong. It would not have occurred to me. I would have picked up a few things along the way, learned a few spiritual principles that I've been able to implement, and that I come here tonight, not out of obligation, but out of gratitude. So thanks.
Thanks, Scott. My name's Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
Elizabeth.
My sobriety date is May 29th, 2017. I currently do not have a home group, although I consider Simple Actions to be the closest thing to my home group right now. I do have a service commitment. I sponsor women, and I've been through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So all my qualifiers. The word that really stood out to me tonight was unmanageable, because when I am in my cups, that is like truly who I am, is completely unmanageable. You know, I grew up in this area. I'm an Ocean View girl. I love everything about Ocean View, the seedy bars, the stale smell of alcohol and cigarettes, the bikers, the fights that break out, like the chaos of Ocean View is just home to me. It makes me feel comfortable. I know it's true though. And when I think about suffering from alcoholic torture, like the first time I drank alcohol, I was 16 and I snuck out of a hotel. I was on a school field trip. Me and my two girlfriends got in a cab in Manhattan, and we went to a fraternity party in Harlem. I did not drink alcoholically the first night, but I loved the effect of alcohol. My shoulders went down. My head got really quiet. I was funnier, I was smarter, I was prettier, I could talk to boys, and I could not wait to do that again. But that torture didn't kick in immediately. Like, I didn't go home and drink. I had very strict parents who, like, knew everything that was going on in the house. I'm so glad that they didn't have, like, the Ring camera, though, like, back then. But anyway, I digress. So as abnormal as his mind, so I went away to school, and I got sister most likely to be found at a party 3 years in a row, big trophy that I brought home and put on my parents' mantelpiece. And they're like, we're spending $45,000 a year for a trophy that's about drinking. And I was like, why are you not impressed? I quickly went from dean's list to failing out. Couldn't tell you why. Maybe it was because of my drinking, but at that time I thought, oh no, I must have a brain tumor. Yeah. It continued to progress. That's a great word for me. Maladjusted to life. I ended up doing all sorts of things. In the end, what alcohol looked like for me was I had to drink every day. I was combining it with pharmaceuticals. I prided myself that I never went to work and drank, but I did a lot of pills at work because the doctor gave them to me, so they were okay. Now, the doctors clearly said take one every 12 hours, and I was taking 12 every hour, so there might have been a problem there. I tried to, I remember I was writing a paper in, on the movie Braveheart, and all of the words were swirling around. And I went outside and I called my doctor, who I had his direct phone number on his cell phone. And I told him what was going on. And he said, whatever you do, don't go to the ER. And I said, okay. And I got off the phone and I went immediately to the ER. And it was the first time I was honest about my drinking and my drugging with anyone. And they put me on this thing called a 5150 hold, where I couldn't leave the hospital. I was transferred to Maryview in the most severe psych ward, like the lockdown. And my roommate, she tried to choke me. She thought I was her daughter. I'm screaming, get me out of here. And the nurse was nice enough to inform me that only a judge could release me at that time. And it was in the middle of the night. And I'm still questioning, what is wrong with my life? Like, it never occurred to me that maybe it was my drinking and my drugging, but it was definitely my mind. But I came into the rooms that weekend, and I was at Maryview Hospital. There were probably 80 people in the room, and I was sitting there going, these people are full of shit. They are not sober and happy. Like, something is wrong here. So I would love to say that I got sober that night, but I went back out 7 days later, and I'll tell you more about that in the future. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you both. We're off to a great start. We're going to continue on Roman numeral 28. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is the manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. Once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve.
Scott, alcoholic. Once again, all kinds of good stuff here. The one that stuck with me, probably that took the longest to register with me, was the part where it says these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form. Because I thought, unlike all you people, you know, I don't get in trouble every time I drink. Therefore, I'm going to keep drinking because sometimes it works out just wonderfully. Although as the years progressed, that went from many times it worked out wonderfully to sometimes it does to very rarely does, to the point where it's probably going to suck, but it's not going to suck as much as being sober. But this idea of never safely using alcohol, you know, I argued that all the time, and it occurred to me long, long after the fact, they'll be like arguing that the brakes of my car worked 8 times out of 10. So that's not okay. They have to work 10 times out of 10. Every time I hit the pedal, the car has to stop. And if it doesn't, I immediately take action on that. But for whatever reason, perhaps due to the craving, the insanity, whatever you want to call it, I was willing to grant alcohol a pass on that for a long time. I said, I don't know, eight times out of 10 is all right. But so that's what sticks with me today, because I have no doubt that, you know, even though I've not been drunk in a long time, if I decided that I had put my words together so eloquently tonight that I deserved a few drinks on the way home, it's possible that I would stop after two, maybe, but I have no clue. Odds are good that two is going to change to 9 or 10 or 12. And I'm not interested in taking that risk anymore, because through the gift of long-term sobriety, I've been able to build up some things in my life that would all rapidly disappear if I drank again. So I look at that much, much differently today, that I can never safely use alcohol. I believe that to be true. And that'll be true until the day that I die. I believe the physical craving is gone. For me, that went fairly quickly. The mental part, though, and the mental craving is gone. I don't crave alcohol, but I don't doubt for a minute if I picked up a drink again that it would all come back. I would say, just in closing with this, you know, it talks about this idea of craving. My favorite definition of that is a songwriter named James McMurtry had a line in a song that said, I don't want another drink. I just want the last one again. Mm-hmm. And that was the story of my drunkenness. You know, sometimes I wanted to be drunker than I was, but quite often I just wanted to just stay where I am, but I needed more and more and more to get there. So I'm thankful not to be battling with that, and thankful to be aware today that if I did pick up a drink again, the battle would start all over again. So fortunately, the rest of the pages in this book tell us how to handle that. So thanks.
Thanks. My name's Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic. Manifestation of an allergy, the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class. So for me, when I drink alcohol and put it into my body, whatever the form is, I get thirstier. I need more. Like, it's never just the idea. It's like, I always try to explain it like I'm kind of like a chemist. Like, I need the right amount of this. I need the right drink, the right pills, the right doctor, the right man, the right job, and then I'll be okay. And it's always in the future. It's always projecting that I need all these other things outside of myself. And then I come into the rooms and they say, well, it's an inside job. And I'm like, well, I'm full of shit. So that's not going to work. Like, I need something to fix me. I cannot fix me. And the message is always so positive in the rooms. And I reject that automatically. It took me 10 years of coming in and out, in and out. Right. And in that 10 years, I was like, it can't be AA. Like, that can't be the solution for me. Like, I can't be sitting in a dark, damp church basement and happy. Right. But everyone else is happy. So why couldn't it be me? So I was willing to try anything else. I went to 28-day rehab. I had a woman do an exorcism on me. I let a woman baptize me in her pool. I went to psychiatrist, psychologist, priest, IOP, yoga, NA, 10 inpatient psych center, retreats, and you name it. I was willing to try anything but this book, right? So because I don't know, I was really obnoxious when I was in the rooms early on. I remember the first time I ever got a ticket for anything was a DUI with a high BAC. And when I was going in to do my five days in jail, I called a woman in the room and I was like, I can't go to jail. I just can't do it. And she's like, well, have you prayed about it? And I'm like, what? No, I need you. Like, what did I do? I binge watched Orange is the New Black show so that I would figure out how to do jail. That's what I did. I'm not praying about it. And she's like, well, maybe you should try and then call me when you get out. And when I got out, did I call her? No, I went and picked up. Because the phenomenon of craving is definitely there. When alcohol is introduced to my body, I just want more and more and more. And I am willing to do anything and everything to get it. So much so that at the end, I was drinking vanilla extract. I was stealing pills and covering it up with other pills and then drinking behind that. I mean, I'm not saying stealing from like nice people. I'm saying I stole from my 3-year-old nephew who had his eye removed, took his pain medication. I was stealing vodka in, what was the one? It was like, anyway, it was a gray colored alcohol and I was putting water in there so my brother wouldn't know. And he came to me like with the bottle and was like, you're such an idiot. Like, how do I not know this isn't my, you know, tequila, whatever it is. Because the allergic types have it once it's formed. I definitely had the habit. I was willing to go to the bitter ends. Yeah, that's all I have for now.
Thanks.
We're going to keep going on page, Roman numeral page 28. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. On the other hand, and strange as it may seem to those who do not understand, Once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules.
Thanks. You know, I mentioned earlier I love to argue and debate, and I also enjoy being right. And I love the way that from the very first exposure that I ever had to AA, they don't do any of that. I went to a counselor on my college campus who recommended AA, and I said, well, surely there's some other options, right? And he said, oh yeah. And so I got immediately excited until he finished his sentence. He said, oh yeah, but that's the only thing that worked for me. So that's all that I can tell you about. And that comes to mind when I read this first sentence. It says, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I had a million reasons for why I drank, and the effect had nothing to do with it. I drank because my dad killed himself when I was 15. I drank because this happened. I drank because that happened. And lo and behold, years later, I've become very good friends with the guy whose dad also killed himself when he was young. He's not an alcoholic. So apparently that's not an automatic connection. No matter what happened, good or bad, you know, I would have used that as an excuse for why I drank. And the truth of it is all right there in that sentence. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol, the ease and comfort. I wasn't interested in addressing the fact that the stress and tension, whatever the opposite of ease and comfort was, had come into my life largely as a result of things that I'd done, whether it's driving drunk or the ways I related to other people. But alcohol just fixed it, and it fixed it quick. And, you know, when I discovered that, you know, whiskey fixed it even quicker than beer, it's like, oh, that's even more awesome. I don't have to go through 12 ounces. One simple shot gets me to the same place. I love it. But it was very much that I drank because of the effect produced by alcohol. I wasn't ready early on to consider this idea of a psychic change. I would pull out my smart ass reply about what is this, you know, Dionne Warwick and the psychic hotline. You know, I had all kinds of crazy ideas of, you know, I like to laugh and to joke. I didn't want to address it seriously because then I'd have to take myself seriously. I didn't know what a psychic change meant. Today, you know, I could spend a long time on that. But the brief version of what a psychic change is to me is that, you know, I can sit here in this moment and be right where I am. You know, I have to go to work tomorrow. There's some things on my mind about that. There's some things on my mind about this and all kinds of details. But all I really have to do is be right here, right now. And the psychic change enables me to do that. You know, before we came out here, you know, David says, hey, you want to come over here for prayer? And I said, oh, I thought he said, oh, are you prepared? Yes, I am. Thank you. And I sat right here while they got up and left the room. Fortunately, I clued in after a few seconds. But man, that is awesome. A psychic change means when somebody asks me if I want to take part in something like that today, I say, well, yes, I do. Because I can sit here and talk with great confidence about how much my life has gotten better since I quit drinking and since I've tried to embrace these principles in all my affairs. But the truth is I need to renew that on a regular basis, whether that means taking a minute or two out before a meeting. That's also part of the psychic change. I mean, just being able to be present, that whatever happens tomorrow, that I'm going to be able to deal with it. And I don't have to worry about that in the moment. And yes, I today easily am able to control my desire for alcohol. Again, with the caveat, that doesn't mean I can go pick up a drink tonight. Because once I do, the craving that we just read about will come back. I am convinced of it. But provided I put the drink down, which I can do with the assistance of a power greater than me, then the only effort necessary is to follow a few simple rules. So thanks.
Thanks for sharing. Still Elizabeth, still an alcoholic. So at the end of my drinking, it was definitely one of those things where it didn't work for me anymore, but I was really going to keep trying. And I was going to try all sorts of things to add to that, whether it be food or men or SVU marathons on TV, whatever gets me out of me, whatever changes the way that I feel is going to be better. And then I already said that I love the effect produced by alcohol and I always wanted more of it. But I couldn't differentiate from the true from the false. People would tell me about myself, and I remember coming into the rooms, and I thought I was like this wonderful daughter and great worker and role model. And then I met these women who told me the truth about myself. And I was like, who are you describing? Because that's not me. I was angry. And I would tell you, I'm not angry. Not at all. But I was raging inside because I wanted to be something. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. And then when you remove the alcohol from me, the sentence restless, irritable, and discontented, I became this monster of a person. And I just kept, I really struggled in the rooms and I had amazing sponsors and I just, my will, I, for one thing, I didn't want it to be a higher power. I wanted it to be something else. I had this bad experience as a child with church. And so I thought, you do good, you get good. You do bad, you get bad. I am definitely bad. I've already told you some of the things that I did that were horrible. So I knew that no higher power was going to watch out for me. So I struggled and struggled and struggled. And the cravings were insane. I mean, I would be in a meeting and I would have to go outside and drink and come back into the meeting. I couldn't even get through an hour. And then I had that DUI. I went back to work and I was still, you know, at that time I was leaving at 2 o'clock drinking in my car. I had the big gulp, you know, with the whole bottle of wine in it because it fit. Driving home, drinking more, adding more pills on it. And then finally, in the end, I had my students who surrounded me on a Friday morning at 7 o'clock in the morning and told me that they were concerned about me. And I was like, I know I've had strep throat, I've had pneumonia, I've had this. No wonder my immune system was shot. I was filled with alcohol and pills. Let me take that away because I keep banging it. And so they said, no, that's not what we're worried about. We're worried about you. It was one specific girl. And she said, we're going to pray for you. Now, I didn't teach at a parochial school. I taught at a school in Norfolk, in downtown Norfolk, or midtown Norfolk, actually. They cleared my classroom and they got into a circle and they put their arms around each other and two football players held me up. She put her hands over my head and the whole time I'm so messed up. I'm going, prayer in school, I don't think that's legal. And so she continued to pray over me. And I heard this voice that wasn't my voice. And it said, if these children care more about you than you care about you, you have got to get away from them. You're harming them. In 10 years, it was the first time I ever, ever thought about someone else, that I thought that I was hurting these children that I claim to love. So I picked up the phone and in the background, my department chair comes and he's like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm leaving. I have to leave. I have to leave. I called my dad for a ride. My car was in the parking lot with the blow and go. I don't know why I didn't just get in the car. I called my dad. My mom's yelling in the background, is she getting arrested again? And that was my day. It was the last day that I taught. And I went to my doctor again and told the truth. And I got a lot of great suggestions and medication, and none of that worked. And I called my same friend that I called before I was going to jail, and I told her what was going on. And she suggested that I try AA again. She also suggested that I do something different, which was to pray about it. And I was like, you've already told me this prayer thing. Like, the prayer thing doesn't work for me. She's like, yeah, but did you try it? And I'm like, no, it doesn't work. So I started praying to this God that I didn't understand and didn't think liked me. And I started showing up when I didn't want to show up. And I started going to the oceanfront to meetings because I just thought I'm going to do opposite of what I think is right. So I'm going to go to the oceanfront. I'm going to show up early. I'm going to go to dinner and make conversation with people I don't know. And slowly over time, I got this woman who sat down with me and we started going through the big book. And I line by line, and something started changing. It wasn't anything that I did, because for me, I was always looking for something external to fix me. And the truth of the matter was, it was an inside job. Like, I needed to connect with a higher power, and I needed to connect with another woman. And I don't know what happened, but suddenly I stopped craving alcohol. In the beginning, I had to sit, you know, with my back to the bar. I couldn't go down the grocery store aisle that had alcohol on it. I couldn't go to my brother's house because he always had way too many fun things going on there that would get me into trouble. But I had this change of heart, and I realized what a dirtbag I had been, right, to my family. And I wanted to do differently. And so it was day by day working with a sponsor, learning that, you know, learning that I had to connect with this higher power that I didn't trust, but somehow trusted me to slowly change. And, you know, and since that time, I slowly have become more of the person that I would like to think that I am, and not the dirtbag that I was through the change. Thanks for letting me share.
Ooh, thanks.
All right. We're going to continue on Roman numeral page 30. They basically, this paragraph, they've gone at length to describe all kinds of different types of drunks, psychopaths, and friendly people and stuff. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. Here's the bad news. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Scott.
Thanks. Yeah, that's a bit of a bomb. Entire abstinence. I don't like that word. And I love how, you know, like the they say this phenomenon, as we have suggested, you know, that's kind of like saying per my recent email. and yet again, you know, because because I'm the smart ass and I want to think they're arguing with me, and they're really not. They're just trying to present the idea again. Because it turns out that there are a lot of great ideas that can be presented to me. And I tend to act as if I've either never heard them before. I just forget very quickly. So the repetition I've come to appreciate today rather than be annoyed by. But then, as you know, as David said, you know, that's kind of the setup. You know, we may be the manifestation of an allergy. We're not swearing to it. We're not promising it. But it's kind of saying, you, if you're with us this far, if you're still on board, then here's the big one. Here's what we got to tell you. The only relief we have to suggest, not require, we're not telling you, you don't have to quit. We're just saying that when it worked for us, we did. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And that just sounds really unpleasant. I've never associated the word abstinent in any subject with any kind of fun or enjoyment of life whatsoever. But then I look at, you know, I realize it's, I have to look at more than just that word. I mean, let's look at the whole paragraph. It's talking about this is this thing that I have to be abstinent from is something that I can never use again without developing the phenomenon of craving. There is no other option. I want the plan C. Like, you told me A, don't like that, don't like B. Where is C? Like, nope, that's it. There's A or B. There's drink and develop the craving, or there's B, don't drink. And I think what keeps me convinced today of that is that, you know, I can get cocky and say, it's been a long time since I was drunk. I don't need this AA business. I don't need to spend the rest of my life going to meetings talking about how miserable it used to be when I drank. No, thank you. I'm moving on. But then I realize what convinces me today, and this is just my personal experience, that the craving is alive and well, is that I see how it manifests itself in other things. You know, if I am in a relationship and I see somebody, you know, one day I want to see them too, or if I eat dinner and, wow, that was delicious, I'd rather have two plates, I think. Wow, that drink was good. I think, do I need a little more coffee? It manifests itself in everything. And this is not, you know, a program about everything. It's a program about alcohol. But I mention that because I have no doubt that if decades after I quit drinking, that the way this craving shows up in so many other things in my life, I have no doubt that it's still alive and well with alcohol. I've achieved this state, or through the power greater than me, I've been able to let that lay dormant for a long time, but I would be mistaken to think that it went away. It's still there. Because I look at the way, like, there's no need in my house for a resealable package of cookies. They don't go stale. And the same would be true. The same would be true if I took a six pack home tonight. Say, man, I convinced a whole lot of people to get sober tonight. I'm going to treat myself to a few. They wouldn't stay in the fridge for long. At some point, that craving that we've read about again and again is going to come back, whether it's been 3 days, 3 hours, or more than that. So I appreciate having the opportunity to read this again. I'll save, part five here talks more about what do we do instead of just abstain. So I'll save that for the next quote. But that's key, too, because that's all I heard at first was AA says you can't drink. Well, screw that. And it never occurred to me, no, AA says a whole lot more than don't drink. It explains to me how I get through life without drinking. And we'll get to that next. Thanks.
Thanks, Scott. I remember when I finally got sober and I was going through the 12 steps and I was working with this woman and she was telling me, earlier where it says can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And we were talking about what did that mean exactly? I was like, well, what about taking, cold medicine? And she's like, do you typically just take one or what? And I was like, oh no, I need more. She's like, then maybe you should refrain from that. When I go to take wine at church, do you typically just take a little sip like you're supposed to? I'm like, no, I like take a whole big gulp of it. I mean, I'm the person that broke into the sacristy at church and drank a whole bottle of the church wine one Sunday because I was trying to get sober. I had to make an amends for that. When it says, in no form. So everything is off the table for me. And when they say the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And she would say, like, Elizabeth, this is a one day at a time program. You only have to do it for today. And I'm like, in next week, next year, I'm like, I have my little planner. I'm making notes. I have PowerPoints for everything. And she's like, just today. And I'm going to like tear up because that woman, she really helped to save my life. And she recently passed. And I'll say she passed with 50 years of sobriety. So I have a one day reprieve contingent on the work that I have to do, though. My body definitely does things different. When I put certain chemicals into it, whether it's, I can get too much green tea and start drinking green tea obsessively. I will binge watch, Bridgerton for like, and I can't start on the new season. I have to go all the way back to the first season and watch all of them. I am like very neurotic about things that make me feel better, make me feel different. But gratefully today, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can sit quietly. I can show up. I can be present. I can be the person that I really, truly want to be. Like, I can make different choices that have nothing to do with me. Like, when I wake up, I am not happy-go-lucky. I am not trying to pray. I am not trying to think of others. I'm trying to think of myself laying in bed with my puppy watching Bridgerton. That's where I want to be. I don't want to be on the phone helping another person, but I get to do that today because it actually somehow chemically changes my brain. And then my brain quiets down like it used to do with alcohol. Like today I can actually be just me. Like I don't have to have something to make me feel different. That entire abstinence. Yeah, that's a pretty big pill to swallow. But for me, if I can just stay in the day, if I can connect with a higher power, if I can connect with other alcoholics, it's much easier. That's all I have.
Thank you. And our final reading for the evening is on page 152. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing. But am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum like some righteous people I see. I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you.
Right. That sounds much better than abstinence. But but I didn't know that when I first started considering, yeah, maybe I should go to AA. All I knew was that it meant that you don't drink. And I thought, well, that's, what do I do then? That's my only answer to find the ease and comfort. And then, we jump here from page 30 to page 152, and there's a lot in between, which you'll cover in the next weeks. But it explains that primarily I do that for me, as was mentioned earlier, this daily maintenance of the spiritual condition, daily, not weekly, sometimes even hourly, but at least daily. Because that's where I get the ease and comfort. That's where I find the acceptance. You know, I drank, yes, because I like the effect produced by alcohol, but also because I had a hard time accepting the world as it was. And when it wasn't different, then, and I realized that I didn't have the power to change it, then I like to drink to kind of forget about it. So when you tell me I have to abstain from that, then I have to find another approach. And part of that approach to the daily maintenance of the spiritual condition is acceptance, which is a whole different topic that I won't ramble on. But what a promise where it says the most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. And, you know, that's one of those things I think almost I have to just experience it to fully believe it. Because if you had told me that, yeah, you just want to get me to join. I'm not sure I'm in on that. But it is absolutely true. You know, there's nothing about my life today that I could have imagined when I was drinking. And I keep in mind, also, because of that, there's nothing about my life today that would stay if I chose to drink again. But, you know, I took a class in college back in the days when drinking was fun, called Mathematics for Elementary School Teachers, because I needed a math class to get a degree. And that was the easiest math class I could find in the university catalog. So there I am in college learning about Venn diagrams and subsets and ridiculous stuff that I should have been learning in third grade. No idea that I would actually grow up and become a teacher. Through the gift of sobriety, you know, I've gone from, you know, spending the winter in Western Tidewater Regional Jail and having no driver's license. I've been granted the opportunity to have a license for my job in addition to driving. So tomorrow morning I get to go and deal with 18 four-year-olds who've been 3 days full of Valentine's candy and all kinds of craziness, which I would not be able to do drunk at all. So we are not a glum lot. There is a substitute. It is vastly more than that. It's the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's also, the second half of step 12 to be able to practice these principles in all my affairs. Outside of meetings, because it's comforting to come to a meeting. But this program teaches me, as I go through the steps over and over again, how to practice these principles so that when I do go to work tomorrow, that I can not be a complete jerk when somebody says something I disagree with or when the kids get out of line. You know, it's having, you know, it said something here about having a sense of purpose. It was so easy to drink when I had no purpose. And so that's the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and discovering purpose is a wonderful antidote to this idea of abstinence. Because if you just tell me, don't think about, you know, don't drink. And it's kind of like, don't think about the pink elephant or whatever that story is. You know, then I think about nothing but pink elephants. So this tells me I have to put something in its place. And, sure enough, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, the ongoing effort to practice these principles in all my affairs has led me to a life that is more satisfactory than I ever achieved on the whole through drinking. Not that I didn't have fun. There were some fun times drinking, but on average, much, much different than I ever could have imagined. I'm thankful to be here tonight. Thanks.
When I first came into the rooms, I created a whole new Facebook account for my sober friends, because I didn't want my other party friends to have any idea about my sober life. That tells you where my mind was. like gratefully today I have one Facebook account and one Instagram. I don't, you know, blast recovery things on it because I just don't think that's the place for it. But I do have amazing friendships today, like the gifts of sobriety. And for me, it's two parts, right? It's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, and the fellowship. I recently had surgery partly because of my alcoholism. I had heart surgery. And I had complications the next day, and I was in the ER, and two people in the room, in this room, like showed up in the hospital. One sat quietly with me and was talking to me, and the other person was being chased by the security guard because he did not check in properly. But he was going to get to me. And so the two... The two of them sat there with me while the doctors were going over everything. And like a good alcoholic, it was really a whole bunch of, you know, excitement when really they didn't know what was going on. They were like, we don't know what's wrong, but you're okay to go home. And so they drove me home and made sure I was taken care of. And another two people in the room were willing to drop everything and come to me. I didn't have friends like that when I was drinking and partying. Like, I didn't have people who would show up for me despite myself. And you know, boring, glum lot, like I've become more of who Elizabeth really is. Like before was just a facade that I would put on when I was drinking. I wanted to be the party girl because I didn't really want you to see me. I didn't want you to know how broken I was inside. And today I can show up and be myself. You know, I can be sad. I can be depressed. I can be happy. I can be whatever it is. And I'm not alone, you know? Like my life today, I haven't returned to teaching by choice. I did not lose my license, but I got to do something different, which was I got to be with my parents every day. They're in their late 70s. My dad's getting ready to turn 80. He was diagnosed with dementia recently. He has heart condition, cancer, asbestos in his lung, all sorts of things. And I take this man to all of his doctor's appointments. We met with an attorney last week. 8 years ago, I was not allowed to drive my mother's car. Now they're making me the medical power of attorney for my parents, for both of them. Like my mom is like, oh, wow, am I really doing this? But she, you know, she's like, you better not put me in an old folks home. And I'm like, do you know how much one of those cost? But my point being that I'm trusted, that I get to show up, I get to be present, I get to be of service to them. And that's a beautiful gift to give to my family and to myself. You know, in my line of sponsorship, we don't have living amends because it's not in the big book. But it's definitely an amends where my dad tonight's like, where are you going so fancy? And I was like, I'm going to an AA meeting. And he's like, good. What time will you be home? I know that you're going to be safe. I mean, this is a man that earlier in the day couldn't remember my name, but he knows that AA is a safe place. And that is a true gift for me. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, like, you guys are my people. Like, where can I go and, like, show up and say the crazy things that I did in my drinking? And people are like, yeah, I get it. I've been there, too. Maybe you didn't do what I did, but you had the same feeling, right? And that's just one of the most coolest things I can say. And it only gets better. You know, whatever I walk through today, I don't walk through alone. Like the women in these rooms and some of the men, I have to be careful with the men because, you know, Elizabeth on her own, not good. But the women in the rooms have taught me responsibility and taught me, you know, what honesty means. Like, because I thought I was honest. There was nothing honest about what I was in the beginning. But today, like, I get to be proud of the person that I'm becoming. And it's only because of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps. Thanks.
Thank you both for coming and sharing with us tonight. That was brilliant. We have no dues or fees, but these are the baskets that we don't put them in. AA, let's see, every AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Mm-hmm. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. And I will mention that we take that very seriously here. Are there any announcements for the good of AA?
Emily.
On Zoom, they don't show up to the church, having a workshop.
Chris S.
Chris S. is doing spiritual principles of a lifetime, like that. He'll speak for like stuff. So you can find it either on our website, simpleactions.net, our link for Zoom, or you can go into the meeting guide app where.
Thanks, Emily.
That's tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Don't come to the church. Just on Zoom. Anybody else? Conference concern. Go ahead, Randy. Come on.
The alcoholic.
Hey, Randy.
March 7th, Talbot.
It's at Talbot Park Baptist Church.
Yep.
And is it at tidewaterintergroup.org? Is it posted there yet?
Flyers
over there. Conference concerns are out. We've got the area assembly, spring assembly is, I don't know the dates, I should.
April 12th.
Say it again?
April conference 12th.
And it's going to be in Chesapeake, right? Or in the Greenbrier area. But the conference concerns have been released to the delegate. They're going to be trickling down our way in the next week or so. So anyway, we're all going to be talking about that stuff in a week or so. So heads up to your GSRs and DCMs and stuff. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. There's literature available right over there. If you need a book, see a home group member. The prices may or may not be written on the inside of them like they're supposed to be. But if you don't have any money, we can work a deal. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are eventually posted on our website at simpleactions.net. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be right here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me, or you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting. Everybody's invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting, which tonight will be held at Stella. All are welcome. I'd like to thank everyone who participated, the kind people who came and set up this room here. And could we thank our speakers again? It's a wonderful thing to feel a part. Morgan, would you read for us?
Sure, please.
I'm Morgan, I'm an alcoholic.
Morgan.
This is a vision for you from Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right.
Thanks, Mom.
Have a nice way of closing.
Yep.
You got it.
Great. That was awesome. Our Father.
Amen. Yeah, he's a good thing.